Welcome to As Told Here, conversations and stories shared in the public interest in Studio W at WPAA-TV and Community Media Center. As Told Here brings community media to where you are.
Welcome to Midlife Matters, where we celebrate women's wisdom and wit. I'm Georgianne Lucier, your host, and I'm delighted to introduce today's guest, Michelle Traub. Michelle has a master's in healing and health, is a writer, and started her career as a dietitian. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've had several areas of focus in your career, and you're now looking to integrate body, mind, spirit.
That is right.
And if you could talk about your latest passion, the nature of narcissistic relationships is something that you're informing people about. And this emerged, I believe, from some of your own journey.
Yes. Yeah. I could say my career has been sort of a long and winding path. Mm-hmm. There's always been a connecting thread. When I look back at it, it was always about sharing information, sharing what I know. It started out in nutrition. I didn't really love being a dietitian. I ended up in the world of communications and did fall in love with that and became a writer and worked on websites. One of the greatest challenges in my career and in that journey and just in my life in general was that I kept running into what I would call manipulators or negative individuals who really sort of lowered my self-esteem. And I kept looking at my life and thinking, what is going wrong? I'm this overachiever. You know, I had studied really hard in school, and I was always trying to do well and be good. And no matter where I was, it seemed as though I was facing challenges where I wasn't good enough, and I was being criticized, or I had what I would almost call like bully bosses. Mm-hmm. It was not really until I wrote my first book in 2021 where I was exploring my online dating experiences, and I stepped back and I said, gee, I've like encountered a lot of narcissistic men in this path. Mm-hmm. What's going on that I could see that I was having this pattern that had existed for a very long time? And I researched it and found it's very common in women who are overachievers and also women who are sensitive as myself, or people who are really driven to help and serve. What actually ends up happening is that encourages people to take.
Okay.
And I think that stepping back and seeing that, it sort of shifted a little bit of my career to say, I want to help other people with this challenge, because it does affect you in all levels of your health. I know it was a driver in my autoimmune disease. I know it's been a driver in sort of low confidence, low energy. What I've done to heal it has been a collective mind, body, spirit work. So I want to continue to share that with other people.
Let's start with a loose definition of a narcissist.
That's a great question. I think many people know what we would call an overt narcissist. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of person who's very grandiose, and they're bragging all the time, and they sort of, you might say, they suck the energy out of the room. Mm-hmm. We see this in politicians who are, I am the greatest, or even in entertainers. Very common. And usually you can see it and kind of say, oh, well, I don't really want to spend much time with that person. Mm-hmm. That's not really the tricky version of the narcissistic person. And I will say it's a spectrum.
Sure.
There's clinical diagnoses, but that is actually fairly rare, because to be a clinical narcissist, you have to lack empathy completely. And luckily, most people don't totally lack it. It's just that they're very low in it. Frequently, they are not self-aware. Mm-hmm. They're not able to self-reflect. They don't have a strong sense of self. And they're often seeking adoration, admiration, love, attention from all the people around them. Mm-hmm. So the reason why someone might be maybe like a magnet, like I feel like I have been, is because I love to give people admiration. I love to be a giver. And so when I align with a narcissist, it's like a magnet. The trickiest piece, though, is there's a whole branch of narcissism that's called the covert narcissist. It's also called the victim narcissist. And this is the type of person who does not show up with a lot of arrogance. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, They seem very oftentimes warm and friendly, but also sometimes they can be very meek. They can be, oh, poor me, nobody helps me, and I'm struggling so much. And again, that leads someone who has a lot of empathy and compassion to jump in and say, oh, I will help you, mm-hmm. I will support you. And then you end up finding you're totally drained by this person. And when you're aware of it, you see it, and you see it actually quite readily. Mm-hmm. If you have really strong boundaries, which unfortunately I learned I did not, oftentimes it won't impact someone mm-hmm. who is willing to say, okay, yeah, I'll help you, but I'm not going to, like, move your whole house
fix
in a
you.
Weekend. Yeah. Right, or I'm not going to, I'm not going to work for you for free or that kind mm-hmm. of thing. It's a bit complicated. I feel like it's becoming a topic that's much more popular.
I've done management studies, and I believe most successful, you talk about politicians, but business people, men and women that rise to the top, have maybe more than a little healthy dose of narcissism,
yes.
right?
Yes.
They've learned to work it in their favor. So one of the things when I was studying management was, do managers manipulate or motivate, right? So people who can manipulate effectively, get people to really kind of sign on to the latest effort, whatever, again, can be very successful. So I could see where it'd be tricky.
Yeah, and I think that where I've struggled with it personally is that I tend to be in nonprofit work.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this sort of belief that everyone who's in nonprofit is doing it out of the goodness of their heart mm-hmm. and they're really compassionate and they're really driven about the mission. Well, to your point, the leaders, they may have a drive that has some compassion to it, but that isn't their sole drive.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for success. They're looking for monetary gain. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've worked in numerous nonprofit arenas where the lead management was making great six-figure salaries, mm-hmm. and then the people at the bottom, all the dedicated worker bees, I like to call us, were making like poverty wages, mm-hmm. $25,000, $35,000. What you're told by a manager like that is, well, we can't afford anymore. Well, don't you want to just do it out of the goodness of your heart? And you realize after a while, well, that's not going to pay the bills in the state of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do see that there's a value to some healthy narcissism, 100%. But sadly, what I think we are seeing with the social media madness is mm-hmm. there's a lot more, because people have this new freedom and vehicle to just be me, 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 me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our society is shifting in a way where that's becoming a little bit more damaging.
So a lot of self-promotion and...
Yeah. Absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah.
And then people who... do make some discovery that they're not where they want to be, or that they have a pattern that they want to change or break. You mentioned when we were talking before the show that you've identified some desires for people to kind of turn the ship around real quickly. Okay, now that I understand that, I'm going to just kind of eliminate that from my behavior or my patterns, have a quick recovery. And you remarked that that can also be a barrier for people to get to a better state of well-being.
100%. Yeah. And then I saw this a lot in my nutrition career, and it was mm-hmm. one of the things that drove me away, is sort of this, Michelle, make me thin. Michelle, I need to, you know, lower my cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wants it fast. Mm-hmm. We're in this like magic pill society where there's pharmacy on every corner and everybody just wants something to take to make their problems go away quickly.
Right.
But the reality is nothing goes away. Nothing that's worth doing is going to be worth doing and is going to have significant impact quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So when you realize you have a pattern of emotional abuse or narcissistic abuse,
mm-hmm.
it is likely very much lodged in your subconscious, unfortunately, mm-hmm. like a lot of our belief structures. And that's hardwired, and it's very tricky. And it's not going to just change because you realized it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why my program, I feel like I try to be so comprehensive with people, because for my own healing, I've had to be really comprehensive and do all the work for many years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I first started on my integrative healing journey like 10 years ago, and I am just now, 10 years later, feeling like, oh yeah, I feel like I'm really comfortable with sharing this with other people.
Mm-hmm.
I was comfortable sharing it in terms of just, here's the information, here are the resources, you're welcome to delve into it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm like, I can filter this through my own life, my own experience, and I have, I'm a real life case study of what has worked for me. Mm-hmm. And so it's a completely different mentality. But I think that, again, culturally and in the social media world, there's this thing we refer to as imposter syndrome. And I see it, it's a widely talked about subject in women oftentimes, mm-hmm. Who are in their 20s and early 30s. And the theory is, you know, it's just low self-esteem or lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. But my belief is every woman in their 20s and early 30s in their career feels like an imposter. And that is absolutely normal. It takes a really long time to learn the work world and to figure yourself out and to gain healthy confidence. Mm-hmm. I think if you come out of school and immediately think, I'm going to be in the corner office and I'm going to be making right. boatloads of money, that's actually a really unhealthy belief. It's actually a little bit narcissistic. Mm-hmm. And so my fear is I see that as society becomes more narcissistic, there's all these people holding themselves to an unrealistic standard.
Okay.
You know, that I don't think I had myself figured out mm-hmm. until my late 30s, if even then. You know, I'm still constantly a work in progress, and I'm 48, so.
Okay. And I know, again, from a management standpoint in business, women have been advised, you know, fake it till you make it, because women, historically, when it was much more about man's world, weren't as inclined to say, oh, I can do something if they didn't already have a lot of experience with it.
Yeah.
Or they would be more self-effacing. Well, yes. I would need help, whatever. And men, characteristically, were painted as jumping in more often. That's not true in every case. But that dichotomy was present, and a lot yeah. of the coaching around women in business was, got to really push yourself forward and not have to have everything all dotted and crossed and whatever in order to start something. Yeah. So that, again, I would see as an interesting balance, particularly for women now, say they're in college, they're used to being kind of equal with men, whatever, and mm-hmm. they're getting out. But it sounds like what you're saying is women tend to be a little more subject or prone to a lot of mixed feelings about who they are, what they can be, and their success factors, perhaps.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's not just, you know, a lot of times we do point to, well, everybody just has low self-esteem, but mm-hmm. it really isn't that. It's not just that. There are so many societal norms and there's limitations. My feeling is that we have to be easier on ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's what my thought is. This idea that you have to be perfect out of the gate. Like you said, men don't have that so much. Mm-hmm. Some do, but not as much. And I feel like that's part of the shift, is that we need to be supportive of women and let them know, if you're feeling like uncomfortable, that's a real feeling. And the whole fake it till you make it, mm-hmm. that doesn't work, because you're, again, I mentioned the subconscious mind. In your mind, you know, I'm not making it. And this faking yeah. is not really working. So it's sort of this, I see the premise, and sometimes it's the catalyst to push mm-hmm. a person forward, but they have to have something to build up that momentum and keep that sustainable. Mm-hmm. Like they have to be working on their own processes to really know that they're worthy and that their work. I think sometimes it's as simple as like stepping back periodically and saying, well, what have I done this year? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like, well, you wrote 20 articles and you launched a website, and it's like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I guess I'm not failing.
Right.
You know, I just don't think we do that enough.
Uh-huh. And interestingly, as I've, interviewed many people on this show, and I ask people advice they'd give their younger self, which we'll get to later, that's a very common theme, is that women will say, I wish I knew it's just going to take time. I wish I could have been kinder to myself.
Yeah.
I wished I had a little more fun. I know I yeah. needed to be driven because I had certain goals, but I wished I had more of a mix and that I would tell myself it's going to be okay. So yeah. that's very interesting.
Yeah. I know that this is such a thread and such mm-hmm. a theme for so many of us, that the regrets we have are mm-hmm. like what we didn't do. They're not what we did.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, we all need to be a little bit gentler on ourselves and each other.
Yes.
which is why I feel like, for me, the narcissism piece has been so upsetting to me. It's because I really am someone who wants to support other people, other women. Mm-hmm. And to have that come back at me,
right,
and have it be, sometimes when you are like that, honestly, people think, what's your angle?
Yeah.
They, I can't tell you how many times people have assumed the worst of my intentions when, mm-hmm. when my intentions had absolutely nothing but positive. Mm-hmm. And so that was so shocking to me. And I had to really step back and say, not everybody is like you.
Right.
Not everybody operates like you. Yeah,
that's a great learning, right?
Yeah.
That we, again and again, come in touch with. Let's talk about your work as your dietitian, because that's where you started.
Yes.
And yeah, you made an interesting remark to me that you thought food is very personal. And that was one
yes.
thing that you found mm-hmm. out of sync with how you like to operate with
yeah.
like telling people how to eat, for
yeah.
example, right?
Yeah. Part of my nature, as you can probably already tell, is I'm very sensitive mm-hmm. and I really like to be supportive of people. And so when I went into nutrition, and I'll tell you, my first career choice was elementary education.
Okay.
And I changed my major quickly because I thought, oh my gosh, there's no way I can stand up in front of a classroom of little kids mm-hmm. every day. And I'm grateful I made that choice because I am quite introverted.
Okay.
And that would have probably been very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
What I still hadn't really figured out about myself was the whole telling people what to eat piece was going to feel bad.
Okay.
Because people love their food. And I can't tell you how many people would come to me, and I worked at the VA in West Haven, and I loved my patients, and they were so sweet. And they'd come to me, and they'd say, you're going to take away my cookies, and you're going to take away this. And I just thought, oh, I hate being the bad guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the food police. And over time, beyond that, my patients were very sick, and they had, many of them had PTSD. I was not emotionally equipped at 23 years old
mm-hmm.
to handle that, and I would go home crying, and it was just, I didn't know how sensitive I was back
yeah.
in those days,
yeah.
and even how introverted I tend to be.
Mm-hmm.
So if I did that job now, it would be completely different, and
yeah.
I'd probably love it,
mm-hmm.
and I'd probably bring a different flavor to
yeah.
my work.
Yeah.
But because of 23-year-old me was feeling like I hate taking away
mm-hmm.
from people,
mm-hmm.
it just, I can see why it just wasn't going to work for me.
I think, again, that's a great point about when we're at different stages of our lives, we can operate and function differently. We've just got a lot more to work with.
Yeah.
Part of that is self-knowledge.
Right.
The experience base that we build up. I use the term, you know, we learn to zig and zag. We don't have all those tools when we're younger.
Right.
And so that's interesting that you did make that shift. And am I correct that you were like Subway's first dietitian?
Yes.
Oh my
goodness. Yeah. So that was the thing about my career that's sort of funny is I feel like my career was in reverse.
Uh-huh.
I had really cool sort of what people would call impressive
yeah.
jobs very early. And then I felt sort of like disillusioned by them. It was
mm-hmm.
like, oh my gosh, this is too much power, too much responsibility. And I'm not totally wanting to step into this. The thing about the Subway job was really interesting. People can't do this anymore. And you're an HR, you have an HR background, so you understand this. But I got so desperate at the VA where I was just like, this is not working. And I'm really unhappy. And I started to just brainstorm, what can I do? And back in those days, we still had want ads for, they were looking for a marketing person at Subway. And I was like, oh my gosh, how cool. I didn't even know Subway was in Milford because
mm-hmm.
I was new to Connecticut. I'm from Rhode Island.
Okay.
On my lunch break, I pick up the phone and call the HR person and say to them, I'm a dietitian and I know you do a lot of nutrition marketing. And
mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, do you have any interest in working with a dietitian? And they said, yes, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, come in for an interview. And in, like, the rest is history. And I started the job and I loved it at first. It was really fun. It was really interesting. The Jared Fogel
mm-hmm.
weight loss extravaganza started then.
Yeah.
I actually remember the PR person coming to me. And at first I was like, oh, this is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't so wonderful because
mm-hmm.
it blew up to an extent where I was like, oh, gosh, this is no longer feeling like a healthy thing for us to be talking about, like
okay.
weight loss with subs.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair to my managers there, they were extremely supportive of me. They were like, yes, be honest. When you're interviewed, tell them, you know that this is not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't asking me to ever say anything I didn't believe.
Okay.
I just felt a piece of me saying, this isn't the kind of work I want to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to do things that feel like I'm more helping in the world. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing was I worked closely with the web manager there. Mm-hmm. And this was when the internet was brand new.
Okay.
I know it sounds silly to people. So I didn't have the internet until my second job. He used to put up my nutrition materials. So I'd write things for him or create printed materials. I'd send it to him and he'd have it up in 5 minutes. And yeah. I would just be like, this
wow.
is magic.
It
was like,
magic.
I want to do this.
Yeah.
And that is literally how it happened. So I ended up taking HTML classes. I got into a web design firm. I was originally thinking, I told them I want to code because I thought, all right, that's basic enough. I'll do coding in my day-to-day and then I'll volunteer and then I'll feel fulfilled.
Okay.
And they said, no, you're not going to code. You know, I'd been there for like a week. They're like, you can write. Mm-hmm. We want you to write. You're going to do our web marketing. And it really, that the rest is history. I started writing and I started working on websites. And I've had that thread consistently. When I've been lucky enough, I've been able to weave back in the nutrition information so that I can do both. Yeah. So it's been pretty cool.
Right now you're writing and you have this program you've developed and you offer free tools from your graduate work. And we'll have that website up for people. And what attracted you to the master's program at the Graduate Institute?
Well, it was very synchronistic. There was two paths, really. Mm-hmm. There was my intellectual desire, because when I did graduate with nutrition, I felt sort of this void. You learn everything about the body and food, but you don't really learn that much about exercise, and you don't learn very much about herbs and supplements, which I was very intrigued by. Mm-hmm. That was like a whole other subtext. And I would self-teach and read up about it, but I never had the actual formal education. And then I got very sick. I got very sick with progression of autoimmune conditions and was really energetically depleted. I was having anxiety attacks. And I just thought, I'm not getting better. And the conventional medicine system wasn't helping me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have to take this into my own hands.
Right.
I ended up finding the program because they were giving a free talk on a topic that I wanted to write a book about. So this is how the universe works. It was it was about lowering cholesterol without medications, which has been a passion of mine since I started. And I go to the talk and they hand out at the end a flyer for the program. And I went, you've got to be kidding me. I could get a degree in this thing that I absolutely love. And it was probably one of the best decisions I ever made, because my life shifted and my health got better and my awareness got better. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I was taught things not just about the body, but about mind and spirit and how it all interplays, and everything made more sense, you know, at that point.
And that's called a master's in health and healing?
Yeah, integrative health and healing.
Wonderful. Yeah. Put it together, right?
Exactly.
And your future goals and plans?
That's a tough question, but I really just want to keep putting my work out into the world. I want to do good. I want to be of service to other women, especially women and men as well, who've gone through the kinds of challenges I've been. I really feel like it is my path to help others help raise their self-esteem, get their self-love back in alignment, and really heal themselves on the full spectrum, mind, body, spirit. So I'm not sure what all going to look like. It's always winding for me.
We've talked about, as we age already, you know, the benefit of reflecting on our journey, thinking about our younger selves. So my question is, what advice would you give your younger self? So you said you're in your late 40s. So say when you were 25 and 40, roughly, you were doing then.
So this is such a great question. And as I shared with you after we talked about this, I had it come up several other times. Mm-hmm. So I know I'm meant to be thinking about this. But 25-year-old me, like I said, she was kind of like out in the world and really sort of successful, but she did not think so.
Yeah.
And so I would say to her, you are enough.
Mm-hmm.
You need to love yourself first. First, you cannot worry about what everybody else thinks of you.
Mm-hmm.
What only thing that matters is what you think of yourself, and that you are doing work with integrity and compassion. 40-year-old me, 40 was probably the hardest year of my life. I lost my grandmother-in-law, a dear aunt, my father to a long battle of Alzheimer's, and had to put a cat to sleep who I had raised since he was a kitten for 12 years, and so it was like
a lot of loss.
Life crushed, yes. And I will tell you one thing I could see the perspective of was that this was why I did the master's degree when I did, because mm-hmm. that happened 2 years later.
Okay.
And I had tools that I mm-hmm. never had before. I had meditation. I had deep breathing. I had grief work. I knew how to handle it, and I could get through it. That was a catalyst to my ultimately leaving my marriage and restarting my life. So mm-hmm. I would tell 40-something, 40-year-old, you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Keep going. I knew I was going to get choked up. Just one step at a time, and that's how you climb the mountain. And when you get there, you're not going to even believe how beautiful it is mm-hmm. because my life is so much better.
Well, that's wonderful. So that's about 8 years ago. So
yeah.
That's a good chunk of a life phase.
It really yes. is. Yes. I mean, I believe that we live multiple lives mm-hmm. in one life, and you can always start again. Every day is an opportunity to start fresh, and I want people to realize that you can always begin again.
Yes, well, wonderful example of that. That's great that you shared that.
Thank
and
you.
What about a favorite quote or mantra?
Well, I have so many, and okay. I have actually have a quote Bible. I think that's such a great way to inspire yourself, is to keep a collection of all mm-hmm. your favorites. My personal favorite that aligns with my work, because I can see it's the thread through everything, is, if you have knowledge, let others light their candles in it. And that's by Margaret Fuller. If I look back to my nutrition to today, mm-hmm. that's always what I'm trying to do, is learn and then share that knowledge with other people. And so that's, I love that as a purpose.
Wonderful.
Thank
well, thank you.
You,
Michelle. This has been terrific and inspiring, and people, I'm sure, have learned a lot. So please tune in to hear other fascinating women on future segments of Midlife Matters. I'm Georgianne Lucier, your host. And thank you for joining us.
Thanks to our local producers and Team Hercules for production support. As Told Here, conversations and stories shared in the public interest in Studio W at WPAA-TV and Community Media Center. As Told Here brings community media to where you are.